about time to begin. We decided to go by that clock. Roll the tapes. That clock, there are various clocks around the village with different times on them, right? And then Mary lifted up her cell phone and said, here is digital time. This is the true time, right? It got downloaded from the internet. It gets checked every once in a while, right? How do we mark our days? How do we talk about those things? Welcome. My name is Dorothy Bass. I have come to Holden from Valparaiso, Indiana. Been coming here for lots of years, and for all four of these sojourns, and it's just lovely to see you all here. Last night we saw that amazing film, which began with the Big Bang, and certain people, scientists, philosophers, would really want to press us what was happening before that. Was there such a thing as before that? Well, not really, right? They're big questions in science about time and what it is, right? Fred pointed out this morning, there was light and dark before there were sun and moon, right? There were days and nights before there was sun. How could that be? When did time start? There are a lot of really abstract, philosophical, theological, and scientific questions about time. And one of the great thinkers of our tradition, Augustine, said, I know what time is as no long as nobody asks me to explain it. And this session is more, or at least the first half of it, is more about I know what time is. The kind of mundane, down-to-earth, practical ways of living in time that we know as a member of a particular society, a particular time, okay? That kind of time, not the kind that we'd have to explain scientifically and philosophically and theologically, but the way in which society structures our hours and our days and thinks about them and names them. I was trained, first of all, as a historian, so there might be some kind of nerdy historical stuff here, but I think it's really interesting. It comes to feel so obvious to us that, you know, there are 24 hours in a day, right? There are 60 minutes in an hour. There's a week. This is not obvious to everybody in the world. Okay, these are human constructions. These are ways that we have come up to talk about the really important reality that we live in time. And our society does this in certain ways, which I want to look into. So this is that down-to-earth kind of time. There's a lot of concern in our society about time, and I'm sure you've been involved in conversations about that. Too much to do, too little time, all of that. But because of this social concern and other reasons, there are some social scientists who every year do a carefully, randomly selected study of how Americans use our time. They're at the University of Maryland, and it's the time use study that's been going on for decades. And they survey representative people on a social scientific basis. And they do it, people over the age of 15. And they do it by interviewing them the day after. And they prepared them to really notice what they're doing on a certain weekday the day before. So everybody's memory is fresh. And it's really, you have to write it down. You can't just think, well, I know I worked for all this time. But you have to really write it down. Did you really? And this year, and just to get the latest data, I decided to look up what this year's said. And the summary in the first paragraph of this study, I'll read. Americans overall are working less and sleeping more than they were a decade ago. Wait, that's only the first, the second part of the sentence is trends that point to an aging population. Okay. And fewer people in the workforce. Okay, people who are discouraged and are not even looking for work anymore. So, first clue, whatever we say about time and how it's arranged and spent, Oh, it's so variable. And huge burdens fall upon some people in our society to be working all the time because they have a healthcare bill or something, you know, or because the job doesn't pay enough to be a living wage, right? Others who would love to work, who would love to have more purposeful, full days, who don't have that opportunity for one reason or another. Okay? Some who do have some choice. Okay? Some who have internalized either sloth or workaholism, so that shapes their time. Okay, so I'm going to make some generalizations, but I don't want to in any way suggest this is evenly distributed across the population. But certainly time and how we use it and the balance among different parts is a marker of human well-being, right? Of being able to live out fully our lives. Okay, couple other things. Okay, I said working more, working less, sleeping more, older, more unemployed. But among those who have a job, people are working more. The workplace is not very friendly right now to well-rounded lives, right? And in general, men spend more time than women on leisure activities. Mm-hmm. Surprise. No, while women sleep about a half hour more each day. And this paragraph did not include housework, but it still is way more women caring for the house. Okay? So if anybody wants to see the details, I've got a bunch of stuff up here for after. That's just an introduction. Yeah.
I think part of the decreased numbers in the workforce isn't simply unemployment. It's that the retirement age, that generation had more children, right? So they're retiring, which means there are fewer workers available.
Yeah, that's good. That's helpful.
I just read an article about that.
No, that's interesting. So all these things, there's so many different systems of time overlapping, including our lifespans. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There are like several different systems that are all happening at the same time to flow together into time's ever-rolling stream as it takes shape in North America in year 2016, right?
Well, I think that the people who have jobs are not sure that they're better off than the people that get pink slips because they know they have to absorb other people's jobs.
Yes.
So there's more to do for any given job and less people to share the work.
Right. Okay. So this is the reality that we know that there's a lot of stresses on different people in our society in different ways, right? One of the most, and I want to talk about some of the ways that we organize and think about time. We'll get back to some of these justice issues in a minute. Fred mentioned this morning, what time is it? You can ask anybody. That may be the most frequent time we use the word time. What time is it, right, every day? Well, I'll start with a little, you know, cute child story. My daughter, age 3, we're sitting in the kitchen, she's at the counter eating breakfast, I'm puttering about, and she says, what time is it? And I said, it's 7 o'clock. Okay, that's one way of telling time, on the clock. No. It's breakfast time. Okay, the rhythms of our bodies, that's a way of telling time. No. It's time for Sesame Street. So maybe she had something she had planned to do, she wanted to do. Maybe we're looking, is it that time? That's another way of telling time. No. Almost time to go to school. Kind of workplace time, you know. No. She said, Halloween all finished. Christmas is all finished. Valentine's is all finished. What time is it? Right? So, but also, you know, like, I don't want to... When you become adept in knowing what time it is in your society, she was just learning to be adept. Mm-hmm. You become enculturated to that society, right? Unfortunately, a lot of people are getting enculturated to a very negative approach to time in this current workplace, right? In this But that's the cheapest
time.
Election, yeah, we'll get to that. Election. Annual cycles, and there are every 4-year cycles, the Olympiad, the election, right? Yeah, so there are all these different ways of knowing what time it is. And another one, this is kind of, I wasn't going to say this, but it's another cute story about her in time. So the following July, we're watching fireworks, and I said, this is a holiday. This is the 4th of July. She said, why? Did something happen to Jesus again? So, anyway, yeah. How we talk, those markers that we put on time, how we think about our days, hours, minutes, etc., become really identity forming, don't they? And just as an example, here's the historical nerdy stuff. Do you know that at the time of the French Revolution, the Revolutionary Assembly in 1793 decided to start over with a new year one, which was the day that the French Republic was founded, September 22, 1792. That became day, I don't know if it was zero or one, okay? There was the age of reason. They wanted everything to be rationalized. They changed the week to 10 days because 10 is the number of reason, right? And there are clocks that have 10 hours on the dial. This didn't last very long because the people didn't really go for it. But if you think about it, changing the shape of the week, you don't have Sunday anymore. You're trying to kill the church. Okay? So that, I mean, that's a really, it's an ideology of time that they tried to lay on, but people did not receive it. 1929, Soviet Union. They changed the week. They tried to change the week, and this was true until 1940, to a 5-day week. And the workforce was divided into fifths, and everybody got 1 day off. And they could say, this is the worker's paradise. You're getting 20% of your days off. But also part of the motive and part of the result was that people didn't share in common a day off. They were always 20%. Okay? And it hurt families, and it was intended to hurt families. Okay? And obviously it was difficult for churches and synagogues, and which were having other difficulties as well, right? I mean, it's an ideology of time. And 1940, they abolished that. I'm wondering if that's because Stalin knew they're heading into war. We need to get the support of the people back again. I don't know. I do know it happened. I don't know why they ended it, but they ended it in 1940. Interesting, right? So when we think about the way time is organized, that kind of shows some of the values that can get embedded in it, right? Okay, so I want to look at a few things about more of the historical points and so on about that might help us to think about the built-in assumptions about time that exist within our calendar and our clocks, okay? And then we'll move on to Sabbath as a countervailing place of resistance, a different way of thinking about time that embodies a theology which can give us a different kind of identity. Fred mentioned this this morning, but when any society is going to start, we have to figure out how to be in time, how to say tomorrow, how to say yesterday, right? How to say later. You start with the basic motions of the planet. Start with the rotation on the axis a day, right? And also then with the orbit around the sun. But the week is arbitrary, right? This is the 7-day pattern is just laid on there. And therefore it makes a pretty strong cultural claim, if you think about it. All right. So let's start. So let me start off with this one. Every culture has ways of talking about the day. It's pretty obvious, right? But it's not really, there's a lot of things that aren't so obvious, okay? And these less obvious things clothe the day with meaning of different kinds, okay? So, when does a day begin?
Sunrise.
Sunrise, okay, but do you want to say where you, why you think so, or where you got that?
That's
built in. That's when darkness becomes light. Okay? Great. Thank you. This is enacted in a way that I really enjoy in the film Groundhog Day. Right? Do you remember that? 6 o'clock every morning. It's a day repeated over and over and over. Bill Murray wakes up and it says 6 o'clock. I got you, babe. Okay? Great. Do we calculate it? Susan asked yesterday, does anybody wake up to a rooster? Do we calculate our day's beginnings mechanically, like that alarm clock did? Or do we observe the rising of the sun? Okay, that's a difference, right? Okay, other times when the day might begin. Yes, Dorothy?
When you wake up.
Whenever you wake up. Woo, okay. Yeah, and there are people who live it, who have to live it backwards, right? Because it can become, I mean, if we all share a sense of when, what the day is, when it begins, when it ends, like, you know, our family probably tried to do when there were children at home, right? Some regularity, that brings you together. But if you're on your own rhythm of shift work or something, that's difficult for people. Yeah. Who,
sunset. Hey.
Sunset. Why do you say sunset?
Well, the Jewish Sabbath begins okay. With
sunset. And in Genesis, when days do finally appear, and it was evening and it was morning, and there's a certain kind of, especially compared to the Groundhog Day thing, there's this, Eugene Peterson has a wonderful riff on that idea that evening is the beginning of the day. But God has been working all through the night. And our work is co-creative work. We join in. We wake up and join in, but it's already going on. So if we work in medical care, God has been stitching those wounds together through the night. And we join in with our help, right? Whatever it might be. God has been growing the crops. We come along with our plows later. Yes?
The day begins when the school bus driver gets to the first stop on the route.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Right. Okay, did you know that for in nautical time, I don't know if this works today, but this is classically, historically the case, the day began and was measured at noon. Because we're gonna be sailing all night. And the only time of day you can really know what time of day it is noon, right? So, and now we do the opposite, it's midnight. You have to have a clock to make midnight work, right? Because you can't tell right there. You gotta have a clock. And so pre-modern time, before everybody was so obsessed about every little minute, you know, there was it didn't matter to be exactly precise. But insofar as you could be precise where you were, it's gonna be noon. Because that's more observable. Okay. Any other proposals here? And is this calculated by machine or observation? That says something too. Yeah.
I'm not a coffee drinker, but I've had friends say the day does not begin until they have their first cup of coffee.
Yeah. But to what extent do we think of time as something that only matters when we're part of it? Right? When I'm ready to go, that's when the day is. Or that there's already something going on out there. I'm gonna join in. It's a kind of a co-creation model as opposed to a really constructive. We gotta make it happen. The calendar, the modern calendar is a bunch of blank, it's a blank set of squares. And nothing matters at all until we make them important. The liturgical calendar, the ritual calendars, they come with some days already on there. Some of those boxes already have meaning, even before we've cranked up our energy, right? So, I'm moving on. This is great. Thank you. Okay, and the other thing is, how do you specify times of day? You know? I'll give you some history, a little nerdy history here. I think this is very interesting. It's not obvious. I mean, obviously, you don't have to have 12 hours. You could have 20 hours. You could have 5 hours. You could, right, if you didn't already know that there's 24 hours or 12 and 12. Apparently, this 12 and 12 model got started in Egypt. And 12 night and 12 day, 12 light and dark, I'm sorry, and took hold of the Mediterranean world by the time of Jesus, in any case. This would be, but it's not always 12 and 12, especially a place like this. What would it be, 18 and 6, you know, or 2 and 22 in some places, right? It's not always even. And in the West, including in this country, until probably the Civil War or so, there were certain clocks that would speed up and slow down with the time. Because you can say there's going to be 12 hours of day, 12, you can say it's still 12 hours, they're just shorter this time of year. Right? Get it? Or they're just longer this time of year. And there were actually clocks that could make this adjustment. Okay? Which is really, really bizarre. And once again, noon is the only time you can really be sure of observing naturally. So, in this little town, it's noon. In this little town, it's 11:55. In this little town, it's 12:05. Okay, because noon is a little bit different as you go around the longitude. And everybody had their own time. Okay, and clearly different peoples in different, worldwide would have their different time. But even within Indiana, there'd be several times going. Okay, based on when noon came. Well, once the railroads became the most powerful economic force in this country, they didn't like that, because how do you say when the train is going to get there? And so this grid of standardized time got laid across our country and also other countries of the West, and now it's extending pretty much around the world. So that there's a grid of standardized time. Okay, noon doesn't really even happen at the same time on the clock each day, astronomically. Okay, so let's make Greenwich Mean Time. They took the mean of all the different times that noon could happen, put it together to standardize time. Does that make sense? Around the world. Then we get time zones, because this whole thing of 12:05, 11:55 is ridiculous. There is a difference between 12 and 1, right? So that gets all standardized. And states like ours that varied which time zone we were in, this was a huge economic scandal, right? How could Wall Street call Indiana? And they had to always remember, was it central time in the summer or central time in the winter? Remember when we had a weird system. So, which Arizona still has, actually. And it's always confusing to go there, because you don't know what time it is when you get off. Okay? So there's a great prizing, but who would prize this standardized, rigid time? Railroads, obviously. Okay? Back up a minute. Clocks. Okay? Clocks. In scripture, it'll be the sixth hour, the ninth hour, very important. But these are by the sun. Okay? And that's close enough for pre-modern people. That's close enough. But then when clocks were invented, actually, weren't really good clocks that could keep a more standard time, by monks who wanted to make sure that they woke up for the proper hours of prayer. So the word clocka means bells. And so they would ring the bell for the 12th hours, for all the different hours of prayer. And that's kind of a lovely thing. You would hear the bell tolling. Who does it toll for? You know, I mean, it had a certain mystical meaning still there at that point, the passage of time, summoning us out of our lives into a different kind of time of worship. But you take that same clock with a bell, and you put it on a steep, on a town hall in the middle of the town square. Okay, and you make sure everybody has one in their own house, and they're all set the same. Well, now you've got the basis of a market economy. You've got much more, it becomes to be more about work and money than about prayer and mortality and finitude. Does that make sense? So clocks come in, and there are theories, since the historical nerdiness. I've read a book which argues that the reason that the British Empire prevailed so widely and over other cultures was that they had the most precise timepieces. That you can do navigation that requires you to know, you triangulate the stars and things. And if you really know what time it is, you're a better sailor. Okay? And there they go. Jonathan Swift, 1720, I think, is writing Gulliver's Travel. There's a little portion where the people in Lilliput say, what's that big thing hanging on your waist? Is that the god that you worship? You look at it before everything you do. Okay? Yeah. Well, is that the god that we worship? And there are times, I think, probably in all of our lives, I mean, I've wondered, is that the god that I worship? You know, being on time for this, or squeezing all that stuff into this particular span of time. Okay, is that the god that we worship? So anyway, and then Greenwich Mean Time is another part of that whole development. Okay, does it make sense?
Holden, I don't know if they still do, but every winter it used to be a consensus decision.
Yes.
Holden would set its own time.
Yes.
All they had to do is decide when to go down to meet the boat.
That
was the only reason to be on.
I discovered that one, it must have been December 1997, I'm in the bookstore, and this very wonderful woman was helping me out. But I was the only person. She was kind of starting to get nervous. So I didn't realize it was already 5:00. You know, she was supposed to be closed. I didn't know. So you have to, but that shows something also. You know how to live within a certain time system, right? We learn how to live in that kind of time. Okay, so I would call this clock time with rigid, and everybody straps it on their wrists, and you put it in your house, and you make sure everything's going. It was kind of the time of the industrial age, of market capitalism. You know, time is money, Benjamin Franklin, right? Very much tied to the workings of the economy. Now, I want to suggest we are living in post-industrial time, or post-modern time, where Americans say, Dorothy, it's 11 o'clock in digital time, right? And it's that little icon on the bottom of your computer screen that, what's happened to time when we get that, and it's 24/7, right? It doesn't matter if it's dark or light. It's a digital thing that keeps going. It's become detached from nature, right? It's out of any context, really. It's a, you know, it's a little digital thing going along. It's very easy to globalize it, right? Those numbers. Any other thoughts about this kind of internet time that we live on now? Yeah.
Are you going to address circadian rhythms?
No, that's interesting. That's one of circadian rhythms. I mean, of our bodies.
Yes.
And yeah, and that I wasn't going to, but thank you.
A 24-hour experiment.
None of our human systems for keeping time match up with nature, with creation, really. You know, unfortunately, it's not exactly 365 days around the sun. So this is created. People have fought wars over what you do with that extra 6 hours, right? And you're mentioning our bodies don't exactly. I think it's interesting. I think that our bodies have kind of evolved clearly in the knowledge that basically we have 24 hours.
Yes.
You know, but our evolution reflects that. That's about as much time as we can go without sleep or food or water or whatever. We can go further, but that's the kind of rhythm. That's interesting, circadian rhythms. All of these grids of time never quite match up to the actual planetary embodied world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mathematicians and programmers have great fun with this because they have their algorithms to work out, you know, that extra 6 hours.
Yes. Thank you. I'm going to say there is something which I didn't know until I was reading up on this last week, because this new literature that comes out always on time, I've studied it for a long time, but this is new. There's an International Earth Rotation and Reference Systems Service that adds leap seconds as needed at the end of June and September. It used to be a big problem if we're off by a whole season, you know, like we're having our spring festival in July. And so that's a problem. We used to try to figure out how, what to do with that. But now we're adding our leap seconds. And furthermore, scientifically, do you know about atomic time? Because precise, this kind of precision I'm talking about, even on computers, it's not precise enough. So there's something called atomic time, which is 9,192,631,770 cycles of particle movement during a certain stage of the degradation of the caesium-133 atom. Okay? You know, and so we have to be more and more and more precise. I mean, in biblical times, it's enough to say in the sixth hour, in the ninth hour. No? And this doesn't lead to relaxation in time, right? This is white knuckle stuff. Yes, any other comments here? Yes.
Well, a jet lag shows how much we suffer in our body when we mess with what is our time.
Yes, right. Right. Our body.
Susan. I think too about, you know, that time of month. And what shapes that time of month, and how when people, women live close together, that time starts meshing, synchronizing with the other.
Yeah.
And the studies about how lunar time affects that as well.
Yeah, interesting. Our bodies are revolved in keeping with these planetary rhythms, but the industrial and post-industrial, modern and post-modern grids of very precise time don't necessarily intersect well with our embodiment. Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. How did the sea turtles know precisely when to all come up onto the beach to go lay their eggs?
Good question. Yeah, they don't lay these grids, do they? But our grids just might endanger them, right? Right. There's somebody new back there. Yeah.
Yes, Corinne and I, when we change from daylight savings and such, have to take our atomic clock for a ride, so then it will flip over that into the correct time.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Here.
How accurate is our time? Because we have a leap year every 4 years. What is that?
Yeah. Okay. The problem is, We've got rotations of the planet and orbits around the sun as our basic markers, but they don't match. Okay? They don't match. And so there have been church schisms over this, because then Easter goes to the wrong spot. And most of us, there was a general consensus of the Renaissance. A lot of people in the West understood that this, we're now really out of sync. Things that should have been in March happened in April, so backwards or whatever. So the Pope decreed we're adding 9 days to the calendar. And it took, that was in 1582. Most Catholic countries did it then. England didn't do it until 1720 because they didn't like popes. Okay? And other people, I think there's one little place in Switzerland, they didn't do it until, you know, the 20th century. So it's not very accurate, and that adds leap years, but that's why now they're looking at leap seconds. Yeah.
Yes. You have to get the telescope out of order to explain this one, but there was a time in the Bible that said that time stood still.
Yes, yeah, no, yeah, yeah. They didn't have to be quite as precise back then about the leap years and the seconds and the hours, I guess. Want to say anything about that? About time standing still? Fred? I think of it as a metaphor. But if you think of how powerful time is.
If you really take it for what we think it means the entire planetary system stopped temporarily, and you can imagine the physical problems of that happening.
Yeah. It's very complicated
stuff.
Yeah, it's a story. It's a story. But thanks. Okay, let me keep going here. But there's certain assumptions built into the, I think, the system of time that prevails in the economy now, and which reaches right into our homes in various ways. Okay, through overwork, through rigid scheduling of whatever kind, and children even are part of school is about socializing them in this particular system of time, and letting them know what counts and what doesn't. Okay, it's fairly detached from nature. Okay, time is money. Time's a blank slate without intrinsic meaning. Runs roughshod over cultures. I mean, Peg said the other day, we're untold in time here. Okay, there's that. But there are cultures that move at very different paces. And so now I understand that the siesta is dying in Spain, for example, because it doesn't comport with this grid of global time that governs the global economy. Yeah?
You know, one of the interesting things that elementary schools now is that it's much more difficult to teach children to tell time because most of them do not have clocks in their home that are anything but digital clocks. So when the teacher uses the 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, that's a totally new concept.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, yes.
It's real hard for third world countries to be mechanized and manufacturing and that sort of thing because they don't. You know, we do mission work in Africa, and it's African time,
But is there some value in that that's being crushed by the global system? You know, is it obvious that we should all be productive every minute? Is it so obvious? You know, what goes into this? I want to keep this quick. I've got to get to more stuff.
This kind of time that we're talking about is the thing that enables empires to have power over so many people.
Absolutely. Good point. Okay. Now, I want to say just a wee bit about two other natural ways of timekeeping quickly. One, the monthly. The lunar calendar. Most ancient calendars have a lunar component. Okay. Chinese, Greek, Persian, Babylonian, Indian. Of course, in India, there's like several different lunar calendars, hundreds of them. But the phases of the moon are one of the ways of marking time, which people have noticed and have used. This is all over the world. But there's the same problem because there's not always the same number of days. We can't sync up this many days exactly to a moon cycle. And so you add a day here, you add a day there, you call it a holiday, you get the... That's probably what the astronomers who the Magi visited in Jerusalem were doing. It's figuring out when are we going to get to Rosh Hashanah? when is it going to come? And do we do it by mechanical calculation, or do we do it by what we see in the heavens? And they used to send out runners to say, okay, we saw the crescent moon, but. The interesting thing, all of these calendars around the world, they were developed various systems of adding days here and there to make it come out right. Okay? The Prophet Muhammad forbade that specifically as part of the Muslim way of life. Follow the lunar calendar. That's our calendar. Not going to add a bunch of days, not going to adjust here and there. We're going to follow the lunar calendar. And so have you noticed that Muslim holidays happen at different times of year. I mean, Ramadan can be in October and then in November, and then it moves through. It takes 33 Muslim years to get to 32 Western years. I think it's interesting. So let's stay with nature on this one. So. Okay, that's interesting. But there are people all over the world who, for this reason, are living on two different kinds of time.
Jewish calendar as well.
Yeah, Jewish calendar as well. But they do at least, they adjusted it to such that at least basically the same time of year comes around from the moving months. Yeah, that's right. And our liturgical year, which I'm not going to discuss but Susan's going to, is another way that we live in a different kind of time that that instructs and corrects this. So that's, so when we talk about the years and saying that about the years, but the other thing about years is how do we know which one we're in time's ever-flowing stream, right? There's, how do we place our, like being able to identify, you know, 1865, 2020, and this is part of how we cope and know who we are, sort of a part of in this country, right? But what are some other ways? And Mary, would you? This is a litany, which maybe, I don't know if you've heard it proclaimed at Christmas. At Christmas Eve service, this is the, it's now chanted in our church and in Mary's church and some other churches as part of the announcement of Christmas.
There's a more cosmic version of this, but we couldn't find it. So here's one you may have heard, actually. Today, the 25th day of December, unknown ages from the time when God created the heavens and the earth, and then formed man and woman in God's own image. Several thousand years after the flood, when God made the rainbow shine forth as a sign of the covenant. 21 centuries from the time of Abraham and Sarah, 13 centuries after Moses led the people of Israel out of Egypt, 1,100 years from the time of Ruth and the Judges, 1,000 years from the anointing of David as king, in the 65th week according to the prophecy of Daniel, in the 194th Olympiad, the 752nd year from the foundation of the city of Rome, the 42nd year of the reign of Octavian Augustus, the whole world being at peace. Jesus Christ, eternal God and Son of the eternal Father, desiring to sanctify the world by his most merciful coming, being conceived by the Holy Spirit, and 9 months having passed since his conception, was born in Bethlehem of Judea of the Virgin Mary. The Nativity of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to the flesh.
Thank you.
There's a telling of time for you.
Some of us have consulted, do we know when that litany was first written? We don't know, but we're pretty sure it's pretty really old. No, we don't know. It's coming back into use, starting with Catholic liturgical practice in recent years, and now some of us are using it in Lutheran churches as well.
Mm-hmm. I think this discussion so far illustrates that time was given by God as a gift to humanity, but did not let humanity be in charge of time.
That's the title of my book.
Yeah.
Receiving the Day, Christian Practices for Opening the Gift of Time. I wrote a book that name, and the whole idea that grid that we were talking about is about mastery. It's down to the atomic second, right? But some of the Christian practices remind us that time is a gift. We do not know how much we have. None of us knows how much we have. It comes every day as a gift, and across time is a gift as well, as this litany says. I mean, think about the litany and all the different ways of describing what time it was that Jesus was born, that the incarnation took place. It wants to be really specific, right? Luke is specific in another kind of way, about as specific as you'd want to be in a pre-modern period. So what do you What did you hear? What kinds of time counting? What kinds of ways of understanding where we are in this? It places us in a long story, doesn't it?
Well, what I like about that, Jesus, the proclamation of birth, is it's in relationship to other people, of course. So what I think of part of our Judeo-Christian understanding is not only the relationship of God to God's people, but us to each other. So you've got Ruth, and you've got, you know, the flood, and these events, and...
And
the reign of Caesar Augustus.
Yes.
So you have that.
Yes.
In the midst of that reign.
Yes, and this, the Olympiad is going on. It doesn't have the founding of Rome, and the such and such a year of the founding of Rome. So we're not leaving that other time to itself untouched. We're going to redeem that time too, right?
There's also a bodily time in that proclamation of how long human gestation is.
Yes. Yes,
she was right on her due date.
Yes. That's right. Is it widely known? This is just a factoid. Is it widely known that the 40 weeks of gestation and the 40, think of all the 40s of scripture, the wandering in the wilderness, days of the flood? Well, think of that. Isn't that kind of cool? Yeah. 40 Sabbaths? That a baby is culture? Is that interesting? Yeah, just these little facts. Once you start thinking about these things, they're like earworms. Okay. We have years partly so we can notice the passage of time in a bigger way. And there's the big way all the way from creation that Mary proclaimed. But there's also each of us getting older each year, right? And remembering anniversaries of one kind or another, whether it's a very joyful one or a very tragic one, that these years, knowing how to count our days, wisdom includes counting them from year to year. Okay? But again, it's finite. It's finite. But it's important. It's important to be able to mark the days, years of our lives in these ways. But they still have arisen from nature, from the way the planets spin. And Sabbath's gonna be a little different. We'll get to that just in a minute. Yeah, Fred, anybody else wanna say anything about years and days before we go to weeks?
I was also thinking about how the Chinese count the days of a life, because when a child is born, this child is already 9 months old, and the child's first birthday is three months after birth.
Cool.
So they take this gestational time as part of the child's life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Good. Anything else? All right. Well, think about these patterns that we're talking about. Some of them have like this global rigid time that I've tried to depict. Have a great deal of social force. Other ways of understanding it have historical force and planetary base, right? A base in the movements of creation. Sabbath comes in and makes a very strong claim about the shape of time, which is not linked to nature. Now, there is one theory that, again, first of all, it's not clear that time needs to be divided into that lengths of that. Time, right? The French tried to do it 10-day weeks. Russians tried to do 5-day weeks. Okay? It doesn't have to be. I'm told that in Western Africa, 4-day weeks on a market cycle, okay? Historically, that there are 8 different kinds of weeks in all the parts of the lands that now are Indonesia, which is a vast territory, different groups. Rome, ancient Rome, moved on an 8-day schedule. And when it came time to move to 7, which they did in the Christian, after Christianity, that wasn't that big a deal, apparently. It was the year and primarily that was more, they were able to move that. You can lay a week system on top of these other systems. Make sense?
You
don't have to renumber your years. So the 7-day rhythm of setting aside 1 day a week is holy. The 7-day pattern of calling society to a halt from one evening to the next. It keeps right on rolling across all these different other calendars. Okay? And in our, but our society still messes with it. You know, the weekend now is people. Well, you ask them about, did China have weeks? Did they have 7 days? Well, no. No, they didn't have to. But this 7-day pattern, which has been now standardized through the West and now globally because of the global mechanisms of time, this could get infected by the industrial age, the postmodern age as well. So that in the early centuries of this then predominantly Protestant country, Sundays were special in many states and parts of the country. But with the Industrial Revolution, and you get people working a real hard 6 days, Sunday, which had been a holy day, also became a holiday. And there's a wonderful book about this called Holy Day, Holiday. Not from holy day to holiday, but now it's both in various ways for people. Okay? And then the economy geared up around what a weekend is and created all kinds of amusement parks and opened the art museums and, you know, things like this. Okay, so that pattern is pretty well fixed. But in its initial claims as a really foundational element within Judaism, especially as it emerged after the exile, which we're talking the 500s before the Common Era, there's another time marker, a really formative part of Jewish life and religion. Sometimes we think of it as just the law, but there's a deep, generous theology, I think, embedded in it. It's often said, more than the Jews have kept the Sabbath has kept the Jews. Because when you put this together, when you spend time, important time, in an ordered way, in common, it keeps you as a people, right? That's our families. If we didn't do that at all, we'd hardly be families. We didn't have some of those common times. So I really talk primarily about, there are all kinds of complicated issues. I won't have time, and probably don't know the answers anyway, but the different proposals for bringing this into Christianity, which has happened in various ways. I mean, I'd be glad to discuss that some other time. But I see the basic Old Testament theology and Jewish practice as centuries of discernment about what it would mean to keep a day holy, what it would mean to rest. Communities actually thinking this through together, but can you do this? Can you not do that? And I would argue that we need to have conversations like that, where we say, how shall we spend this time of freedom together? You know, what are the things that are life-giving about it? It's not just about not doing things. It's much bigger than that. My basic argument is going to be that embedded in, you're going to hear these two the Ten Commandments appear twice in the Old Testament. The only time there's a significant difference between one rendering and the other is on this particular commandment. Okay, that Deuteronomy and Exodus speak this word differently. They say the same, they say to do the same thing, but they give different reasons. And in those reasons, I would argue, there is kind of almost the heart of the theology of the Old Testament. Okay? God as creator, God as the one who leads us out of Egypt and freedom. Those two things are there. And who has Exodus? Marilyn? Marilyn's going to read this. You just read it.
This is Exodus 20, verse 8-12. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the
sea and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it.
Thank you. Thank you. This, and you know, in Genesis, there's the whole 6 days of creation, the first chapter, and then the story of God resting, right? I think that this links Sabbath keeping to a certain way of being in creation. Remembering who created it, okay, and honoring that person, that creative force, in response to a command, but also as a gift. Carl Barth has a wonderful way of talking about this, that God, having finished the work of creation and declaring it good, sort of celebrated by sharing time with the man and the woman and with all creation, really. Celebrated having given, saying, this is good, not only good, it's good enough. We don't need to make a better creature than this one. This one is the one we love, you know, and not just humans, but all of creation. So among the things that have developed in Jewish interpretation of this commandment over the years, one of the basic things that many people have observed is don't change nature. You're digging it up, you're burning it all the time. On this day, hands off, be with it. Remember that you are part of it. This relates to Dan's thing about communion in the universe. Okay, you're part of it. So that's why they don't light fires. Orthodox Jews don't light fires or turn on the electric switches or things like that. Okay? What else? No commerce. Let's not be trading it. And you can say, okay, but then you can be really terrible for 6 days. You have to be really respectful. Well, first of all, if we all stopped burning fossil fuels even one day a week, it would really help. Okay, so we don't want to make the enemy good, the enemy of the good, right? But beyond that, what's I going to say? I don't know.
Wasn't that in our gospel reading? You can't wait,
you can't wait
for the Sabbath to be over so you can go back to cheating them.
That was in Amos.
That was in Amos, right.
Yeah, 2 days ago in the lectionary. Mm-hmm. You're just waiting around for the Sabbath to be over so you can start cheating again. Mm-hmm. Abraham Joshua Heschel, wonderful rabbi, who offered this gift of Sabbath as wisdom for modern man in a book in the 1950s. He wasn't trying to keep it for the Jews. This is important for our culture. The Sabbath cannot stand alone amidst a week of perversity. If you're even remembering that you really shouldn't burn fossil fuels when you're thinking about God on that day of worship, it's going to make a difference in how you use them the rest of the time, I think. Okay. One more minute. Who are you? Phyllis.
Here.
There you are. Just read the second part. It's the same commandment to not do neither you nor your servants or slaves nor the animals. I mean, it's a whole rest for the whole economy.
Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath.
Why do we keep Sabbath? It's the Exodus. It's the reason God let us out, the mighty arm. Remember that you were slaves, okay? And now you're not. Slaves can't keep a day off, right? And I see this as embedding resistance to slavery in all its form in our lives and in our memories and our imagination. Do you imagine the world differently? Is it possible that this world could be without slavery? For the animals, for the slaves, for everyone, not just for us. Okay, and further, and we could go, so Walter Brueggemann has a new book called Sabbath as Resistance, if you're interested in this, where he does a whole lot of Old Testament texts and talks about the liberating alternative that is embedded in this command, in this gift, command gift, okay? The other thing about leading us out with the mighty arm, my last point.
You're okay.
We are... When we're let out, we're called into peoplehood. Those who were let out were called into peoplehood. And when you share, become part of a people with the other people who are the free people, who want to also make this true for the animals and slaves and so on. You become part of a people. And I was writing that book on receiving the day when teaching here a number of years ago. And I just want to mention two individuals who responded to it, ways I remember. And you'll probably remember these persons. One was Ione. Remember Ione? What was Ione's last name? She was from Minnesota. She was working as the program assistant at that time. Ione. She has passed away since then. And she was in her 60s or 70s at the time I'm describing. Okay? And she said, and here there was a Sabbath practice at Holden, do I have to take the day off? I'm so happy on my days in the office over here in Koinonia. Do I have to take the day off? So how do we provide peoplehood, hospitality, company? It's part of what the church needs to do. Certainly what Jewish ritual on Saturdays, Friday nights, guests especially. Right? It, Sabbath time can be lonely time unless we are part of a people that spend it together. Okay? The other one was Maggie Fink, who, Ed Short brought up a message from her. She's a nurse in South Dakota, and she had to work sometimes in the rest of the nursing home where she worked on Sundays in this disturbed her jet. But she and her friend, it was every other week, they decided that they would try to do little special things for all the residents on Sundays. And so they would bring flowers, they would massage feet, they would do special little things. And I do think that some of us are called to make it possible for others to keep Sabbath. And that's how I understand those wonderful ones among you who serve us at the table and music and other ways in church, okay? That you're helping, you're making Sabbath for us, and we want to make sure you get some Sabbath as well. It's a wonderful gift. Okay, can you bring this together? Thank you. Linda, you want to say anything? Okay, well, thank you. See, there's the tyranny of the clock, but it's, I think I should stop, and thanks for your attention, and you know, may you live well in time.
Lunch is until 12:30.
Lunch is until 12:30. Well, so those who wish can leave, and if anybody wants to chat further, we'll chat further.